Welcome to TSW Comics,
a monthly look between the covers of Marvel's Star Wars comic book series.
Hello everyone, welcome back to TSW Comics. This is issue number 5. I'm Mark.
And I'm Rob Cast.
And I'm Tim.
Yes, that's a third voice.
Yes.
We are really spoiling you. Yeah. Tim, do you want to let everyone know who you are? And
yeah,
why you felt it was necessary to gatecrash our podcast?
I'm Tim. I'm from the Nerd Room Podcast, which is a member of the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network. I do a bunch of writing on TSW website. I've partaken in a few roundtables. And myself, like these two gentlemen here, I'm an avid comic reader, particularly in the Marvel and Star Wars world.
Yeah, I thought it was probably prudent to invite you on, Tim, so that Rob had another comic book aficionado on board with him, rather than just dealing with me.
I thought you were going to say Canadian.
No, not at all. No, instead of just having someone that hasn't read anything ever and can't speak intelligently about a thing. I thought it would be good to get. It's nice to have you. Nice to have you on board, Tim. So we've got a few bits to talk about. In fact, the biggest story we've got to talk about this week, Tim, is something that you've written. But I think before we get to that, should we just talk about our month in comics and what we've been? Because I've actually read some stuff this month. I'm very proud of myself. I thought it might be a good idea to kick around what we've been reading over the past month. So, Mr. Cast, your pull list is a monster.
Yes.
What have you got to talk about this month?
Well, we'll keep it to the Star Wars, obviously.
Indeed.
My comic book guy has standing orders. If it says Star Wars on it, pull it. And that includes the most recent Star Wars, the Star Wars proper run. And that was, I enjoyed that one because there was a whole lot of R2-D2 in that one, but I'll get to that later. Of course, Dr. Aphra, the Mace Windu started, and I was able to hop into that one. Captain Phasma, Rogue One, the comic adaptation finished up, and the Star Wars Adventures, the IDW. It's kind of like an offshoot Marvel, I guess. I'm not sure why Lucasfilm or Marvel would hand it off, but maybe it's more of a young reader's comic. But again, because my comic guy is a good guy and he has those standing orders, it got pulled. So I read it, and it's pretty decent, like for a young reader's comic.
What is it focused on, Rob? The IDW.
It's just little stories. Like, there's a story in there with Rey and Ankar Plutt, I believe, and he just he gets kidnapped because he has something. I don't want to give anything away because it actually has a little plot line that runs through. So it just adventures on Jakku before she gets tangled up with BB-8 and. And where we pick up from The Force Awakens.
That must tie a bit with the Forces of Destiny stuff too, does it? Kind of all in that timeline?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's almost exactly like that. It's you can really, really see how they're trying to weave it all together. Mm-hmm. And then there's another one with Obi-Wan and, what's his name? The guy at the diner with the forearms.
Oh, Dexter. Jester.
Yes. Yeah, so there's a little story at the end with Obi-Wan and Dexter and how they're – it's basically a quick little story, but it's almost like building where when we get to Attack of the Clones, you can see, oh, yes, they have a little bit of history. We know that by watching the movie, but the comic just sheds a little bit of light on that. So
IDW are doing an adaptation of The Force Awakens. Is it The Force Awakens they did, or was it Rogue One?
No, Marvel handled both of those.
I think IDW, Tim, you might know more about this. IDW are doing something because it's giving away this using deleted scenes, and I can't decide whether it was The Force Awakens or Rogue One.
No, I haven't heard of that one. I've just heard of this, the kind of the young reader adaptations that they're doing there.
Right.
Heard any more adaptations of any of the films, but
I've heard something. I think it was on Slash Film Daily where they were talking about it, so it might be upcoming. But I'll have to do a bit of research and maybe put something out on the site about it, because I'm certain they've said that they're doing it, and it seems pointless, but it is using something, some deleted elements somewhere along the line. But That's interesting. I was going to make the same point you did, actually, Tim, about how close this is to the Forces of Destiny.
Yeah.
Are they really, with this stuff they're doing in canon now, are they using up every square inch of space with expanded? Because they're running out of options here, aren't they?
I think that they're trying to squeeze so much into that Force Awakens timeline without expanding beyond what's already been told. I think that's why they're having the issues there with jamming so much into that small portion of time with the Rey and Jakku. They can't go back and tell her backstory yet until they reveal whatever they're going to reveal in The Last Jedi and in Episode 9 and that. And that whole other time frame in between Return of the Jedi, or really Aftermath, and The Force Awakens is probably all off limits until they're done telling this, at least this first trilogy.
Yeah.
So I think they're jamming so much. It's like what they're doing with the current comics too, is that they're jamming a lot in between A New Hope and Empire, because I think they've got something cooking up between Empire and Return of the Jedi. Like, it just seems like they're very bound in their time frame as to what they're allowed to tell.
That's a good catch, actually, Tim, because that's fertile ground to sort of tell, if we're pushing Shadows of the Empire out of the way, there's fertile ground there to explore that period of time between Empire and Jedi when they're laying the groundwork for the Han Solo rescue. And you've got the plans for DS2 and all that stuff to be caught. Sorry.
Yeah, it seems like they're really using, like, when they had permission finally to play in the Lucas sandbox, they're using every grain of sand in there. They're really pushing the edges. It's fantastic. Like, I love it. And I think, Tim, I got to agree with you too, that there's certain threads they can't pull yet.
No. I'm sure we'll see it eventually.
Oh, for sure. And
when JJ's done on 9,
yeah,
without doubt. There'll be a tidal wave of material.
Oh,
definitely.
Excellent. Right, Tim, what have you been reading this month?
I've actually used this month as my catch-up month. I was really far behind on all my Star Wars reading, but right now I've caught up with Vader. I went back and read the Cassian and K2. I jumped into the new Phasma, and I'm slowly catching up on Aphra here. I did read the annual just recently, and then I've also gone back and started recollecting the original 77 run.
Oh, really?
I picked up a few issues, issue 2 and issue 3 not too long ago. And then for my birthday, my wife got me this large print that I've never seen before, but it's actually, I think there's 2 or 3 of them, and it takes the first 3 issues and issue 3 through 6 and combine them into almost a magazine size of comic book,
right
from 1977. So I've been trying to go back and read some of those old stories too, just to get a bit of flavor. I don't dabble too much in the legends, but I like to go back and collect those at least.
Have you come across the rabbit yet, Jackson?
Yeah, oh yeah.
let's move on.
Yes.
You mentioned Phasma. Now, this is because I'm really lazy comic book reader. I've got two series I'm following now, Aphra and Vader, and I did the annual, but I'm trying to go back and pick up some of the limited runs now they're finished. So Lando I did this month, because Rob, you were saying how fantastic that was, so I definitely need to hit that. But Tim, you mentioned Phasma.
Yeah,
what's your take on that book?
You know what, it's some people have these issues with taking and stretching out a character within 4 or 5 issues. But this Phasma book, I think it's excellent. And the real thing that I like about it, it seems to be telling a story that's going to matter for The Last Jedi. And I don't want to give any of it away, but there seems to be consequences, or at least revelations, with Phasma and her thought process post pulling the shields down on Starkiller Base, and then what we're going to see with potentially her and the Executioner stormtroopers, and what looks to be some sort of arc with Finn. There's a lot of developments in here in a short comic book that really got my wheels turning about, okay, this has actual implications for going into The Last Jedi. And that's what I like about it. It's not kind of a fluffy piece. It seems to have like that impact, that story basis for going into something a bit bigger.
Yeah, in terms of, like you said, a fluffy piece, Rob and I discussed on previous episodes the Darth Maul run, and yeah. I would probably file that under fluff, because it didn't have any impact on the character.
No, it doesn't change anything, doesn't leave. No. No,
No, carry on, Tim.
I was going to say, with Maul, they just used that character and him being present in Rebels in such a big way, and they've just kind of bled off of that. Mm. And I was looking for a lot more to that book. I was looking for kind of that exploration of who Darth Maul was prior to his corruption by Darth Sidious. And we didn't really, we got some insight into that, but you look at some of the other one shots they've done and they just seem to be using characters. Even the Cassian and K2 one, it was okay, but it didn't go into the depth that I wanted to. But this Phasma run seems to be hitting that point where you don't necessarily need it to go into The Last Jedi, but I think reflecting back on it, at least from this first issue, it's going to weigh into her arc going forward. I don't know. Yeah. You read it, Rob, too. What do you think?
Well, that's what I was – I've got to agree with you. And we mentioned this before about the Darth Maul. Darth Maul, and Mark and I have talked about this, there's something about the dark side and the Sith that are just awesome. They fly off the comic book page, and they're so – they look like – I'm not an artist personally, but they look like just – they just be just a dream to draw. Like Darth Maul looks really cool and his double-bladed saber and this. But it – we picked up. And they tied a little bow on it in the end, and the Emperor said, "Oh, I, my new all about what you're doing. Okay, carry on." And then there was nothing. But like you're saying, Tim, with Phasma, it seems like there's character building in there. Like Maul was just here. It is wow. It's a visual spectacle. Cool characters. Cool tie-ins from Rebels Clone Wars. Oh, this is really great. Boom, it's over, with no repercussions and no. There, it's like, you know, when you drop a pebble into a pond, there's no ripple that's going to, we're going to see later, or even go, oh, that's why Maul does this later on. We don't feel that. But with Phasma, like you're saying, Tim, I definitely think there's little pebbles that we're going to be feeling those ripples in the movies. Now, whether you read the comic or not, it's not going to be here nor there, but we'll know, it's a character build.
Yeah. Well, because the big questions coming off The Force Awakens you had with her was, how did she get off Starkiller Base? Yep. And how did she cover her tracks? And in this first book, they answer both of those questions.
Yep.
And they don't wait until the fourth issue to do that. Like, we've seen other comic books that have tried to fill in little gaps that are four or five issues, and they take all four issues to fill in that one little story that was promised in the first premise that was released when they announced the book. This, they've done all of that in one book here, and now we get to see past Starkiller. We don't spend all of the time in the last, you know, half an hour on Starkiller Base. We're going to see beyond that, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, and they're filling up plot holes, like, and they're using one single issue of a comic to do so, when I know Star Wars has been notorious even before they released a whole movie filling up a plot hole that was 40 years old. So you mean here we go, one issue, this is how she gets off, this is how she covers her tracks, boom boom boom, okay, good, no, let's move on.
yeah it's gonna drive her right into The Last Jedi.
Yeah,
which is gonna be
cool. And this miniseries runs past The Last Jedi release, right? So are they getting ready? It's five issues, is it not?
Yeah. Four issues, I think.
Oh, is it four? So it'll lead right up to Last Jedi. I didn't know whether or not they were going to drop something in there.
It may run concurrently with the first part of The Last Jedi, maybe. And it might pick up right where we leave off in The Last Jedi.
Sorry, Rob,
we had that with Shattered Empire with run up to Force Awakens as well. There was a little, not Shattered Empire. What was the one? There was a comic run, Star Wars.
There was the Shattered Empire.
Yeah,
that came
Shattered
out
Empire
of,
was.
Yeah.
But that's after Return of the Jedi.
Yes, exactly. But there was a short run with the build-up to, and it ended, and then it ended the week before, and then boom, we saw the movie.
Yeah, okay, sorry. I thought you meant timeline-wise. I was like,
eh? Oh, yeah, no.
Does this, I haven't read the Phasma book yet. I've got the audio book. I haven't had a chance to start it yet, but I'm wondering where the comic series, because it's up with the movies, the Phasma book's a prequel, is it not? So
yeah, it is.
Is there any room for, I mean, they're doing the same thing that we just spoke about with the IDW book and Forces of Destiny. Again, they're using up every scrap they can, aren't they, right now? But are we concerned at all about any crosstalk between these two projects?
I don't know if they're going to cross over much, but I would be hazard to guess that there might be some inferences, but probably they're quite separate, because I think this takes place quite, or at least the Phasma book takes place quite a bit before the Force Awakens. It goes through, because I know there's a Crimson Stormtrooper in there, and it goes through her dark past and kind of building into who she is in The Force Awakens. So they seem to be building this character for a much larger piece in whether it's The Last Jedi or Episode 9. But I'm wondering if it's a reaction to the fans about not having enough of her in
absolutely
The Force Awakens, and it's like, here, have all of this before we go into The Last Jedi.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me if that's the case, actually. That's a really good point.
And I think, too, they don't want to do what they've done in the past. Like, I know Rogue One, leaving Rogue One alone, because everybody dies in Rogue One. Spoilers. But if you're listening to this show, yeah. but I think with Darth Maul dying in the third act of
Rob. Spoiling everything.
Phantom Menace and Boba Fett dying in the first act of Return of the Jedi.
Okay.
I know, I'm just dropping them all over the place. And you hear you have Darth Maul and Boba Fett. Someone, like, if you look at any collector's room and they got statues and everything else, it's like, oh, like they shoot off the shelves and even in the books and everything else. And I think what they're realizing with Phasma is you've got a really awesome looking, sounding character that looks great in a comic book, that looks great on the screen, and she's on that villain side. She's not dark side, but she's a part of the villains. So I think maybe they're learning from the past, like look at Boba Fett. It's like, oh, he's gone now. Mm. I'm sure they'd love to have him like hop in on, on one of these new movies, because he's still around somewhere. And he got eaten. He's being digested. That's only hasn't been 1,000 years yet. But
poor old John Hamm.
Yeah.
Poor old John Hamm got eaten.
But you understand what I'm saying with this? With I think with their characters, they have them. Yeah, let's get more out of them while they're still alive in universe.
Yeah.
So we don't know where they're going.
And, they can't cultivate that though, can they? They can't. The Boba Fett was an accident.
Yep.
Yes.
The mystique that built up around him was an accident, and yeah. Phasma seems. I hesitate to say calculated, but she's very much a design, a construct.
Yep.
And I think they were caught off guard how much people expected from her and Constable Zuvio coming out of The Force Awakens. Yep. Everyone thought these are going to be huge, right? But she didn't get a lot of screen time. She should have. And Tim, so I think you're right. They're probably building this character now as a reaction to that lack of story. She's all presence with no story. And so I think next year we can probably all start reserving our copies of the 5-issue miniseries for DJ, because I suspect he might fall into that category as well.
Yeah. Well, that Zuvio comment's funny, because he had more screen time in the Maul comic than he did in...
Didn't he? Exactly. All those little cameos. I think he was in our show notes for that episode of the podcast more than he was in the film.
I remember you guys talking about it.
Yeah. Good old Zuvio. Well, I caught up with somebody who definitely has taken on a life of her own in Star Wars canon now, and that's Dr. Aphra. I say caught up. I was caught up for a couple of days, and then they dropped another issue, so I'm behind again. But I picked everything up and binge read. So I got the best and the worst of Aphra in kind of a couple of days reading, because I had to touch on some Citadel issues in there, which I didn't enjoy. I didn't find them all that rewarding. I thought the artwork was just dreadful. But then we got straight back into the stuff with the crystal, and the Jedi spirit that was in the crystal. And the artwork in that went up through the roof. I love this character. I love this book. Have you guys read that this month?
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
I'm a little behind on Aphra, but I've read the annual there.
Well, we're trying not to spoil it. All right, the annual's safe ground for us to discuss then. I will say, I think it was Ryan on, he's a listener from YouTube, listens to us on YouTube every week, and he was urging me, catch up with Aphra. So, Ryan, I've done it, and you were right, fantastic. But this annual, what do we make of the annual? Because I'm not so sure about what they've done here, to be honest with you. It seems a little bit too contemporary with the journalists, and the sardonic nature of the wit between, and the exchanges between those journalists is too on the nose. The gladiatorial stuff is fine, seems like a throwaway joke to me. I really could have done with more Aphra in my Aphra annual than I got. What do you guys think about it? Tim, what do you make of the annual?
Well, they usually reserve the annuals, it seems, a lot, at least from the last few that have come out from Star Wars and Vader on that, to tell really small off stories that maybe don't particularly focus on the main character. So when I was reading it, I was quite surprised that it was actually all focused in on the Wookiee and not BT and 000. I thought that's where they're going to go with it, yeah. Because these guys have had a few backup stories and they're quite popular characters. But I agree with you that the whole journalist thing confused me actually for a little bit. I didn't really get what's going on, and they were hopping back and forth in timeline and not actually really tagging where they were.
Yeah.
And so I found myself after I read, actually had to read through it twice. But after I got through it, I was like, okay, this makes sense. And all the gladiatorial thing reminded me of was Thor Ragnarok that's coming out this year. That's all I could think about while that was happening. And it was just, it wasn't the depth I wanted for, I can't even say the Wookiee's name, so I'm not going to even attempt it. But
Black Chrysanthemum, that's the way I've been.
Chrysanthemum, okay. Yep.
That's the way I've been going with it.
Okay. They didn't give me that depth that was promised on the first cover, like the origin story of this Wookiee. And it was cool to kind of go back and visit Kashyyyk a little bit, but it just, there was no depth there to what they were doing. And this whole reporting thing, sure, it was just like you said, more of a contemporary way to get the Wookiee separated from Aphra for a little bit to continue on what is going to be furthering the story within Aphra.
Mm.
So it was okay. It wasn't my favorite Aphra book I've read.
That's the thing, isn't it? When it's only okay, I really like to, like, the issue 5 of Vader, spoilers, jumped ahead in the thing, blew my mind. And I've put a 10 out of 10 rating on the show notes, again, spoilers, Rob, because I know how you feel about 10 out of 10 ratings. I've done that deliberately to sort of illustrate how much I love this book. But anyway, I've jumped forward. Yeah, we go back to the Aphra annual. It's the whole contemporary thing with the journalists. You know, on the main show on Talk Star Wars with Steve, my naked co-host, he has this major issue when too much reality seeps into his Star Wars. If they use terminology that it's too contemporary, like if I were to say coffee, I think in somewhere they mentioned a hot chocolate. He hated that. He hates that. He doesn't want to be brought out of it. And so when I was reading the Aphra annual, that's all I kept thinking about. I kept thinking, oh, you know, this Steve would hate this because there's too much contemporary stuff, you know, talking about the Vine instead of the web and sneaking out videos and things. I was just like, I really don't need that minutia. That's Star Trek. That's not Star Wars to me. So that kind of rubbed me the wrong way. Rob, what are your thoughts on the annual?
Well, the annual, it was interesting. It was like, it's just another dive into the characters. But my overall opinion about Aphra was, it picked up from the first Vader run, which was awesome. And it was like, oh, here's this character. I expected nothing. Cause for me, it was, here's a standalone comic, our first standalone comic that doesn't have Han Solo, Luke, Vader, Leia, Chewbacca, 3PO. Like, it doesn't have all these. It was just, here's a bunch of brand new characters that you haven't seen on the TV or on the big screen, and here it is. So I expected nothing, and then I was pleasantly surprised. So I don't know if because my bar was so low, but I'm like, oh, this Aphra is really, really good. And it got better and better and better. But it seems with Dr. Aphra, when you include the annual and Screaming Citadel, when it veers off the Dr. Aphra style and story, it loses something for me. And I don't know. And we've discussed this about Screaming Citadel, saying, I think it's like, oh, we're going to have the Star Wars run is so amazing. And now you got Aphra and you're going to have Aphra and Luke. This is going to be the best. And we just set the bar so high that it couldn't help but fail in our eyes, you mean? But I think with the Aphra story, including this annual, when they veer it off, it's not Dr. Aphra anymore for some reason. It just, oh, it's like it's walking this tight line, this tightrope, that when it goes a little bit off, it goes off.
Yeah.
But on its own, if anybody were to come up to me and say, what do you, I'm new to reading Star Wars. Oh, you got to read Vader. Obviously the Star Wars, the main run's pretty good. And oh, I know you're not going to pick it up. Like you won't grab it when you walk in the store, but make sure you look for Dr. Aphra. You mean, cause you'll want to make sure it's like you're telling somebody, this is something that not everybody knows. It's like, here's the inside scoop. You want to read this book.
Yeah.
And the annuals, it just, just fell short. That's all. It just wasn't. It picked right back up again once it got back going.
I could see what they were trying to do with it. And to be honest, yeah. with what they were attempting, they've already been successful with Aphra in her own right. And she is the holy grail, and it's this is rarely ever done, where you take half a step away from Star Wars, create a new character, and have them become beloved. We've seen it now. I mean, Clone Wars doesn't count because they're the top tier characters, Obi-Wan and Anakin. Yeah. But Rebels, we've seen it. There's some alchemy there, right? You create these characters and suddenly they land with the audience and everyone falls in love with them. I'm looking at Hera, the 6-inch black series, hanging on my wall now. I love these characters. Right. And Aphra, they've done it again. And to do it in a medium that doesn't even show up on anyone's radar, does it? Comic books. Right. It's so niche for us in fandom. She deserves a bigger audience. And when she does deliver in that book, they're on fire.
Mm.
And like you say, Rob, when you juxtapose her against the original trilogy characters, she's diminished by their presence.
Yes.
When you put her up against Luke, they're almost like someone's just writing a female version of Han. Because the way she interacts with him, and there's none of the usual qualities of Aphra in there.
Well, that was my first impression of Aphra. Like, it was almost like Harrison Ford, Han Solo / Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Now, on its own, that sounds amazing, but you stick them with anything else, like it's like oh, you put peanut butter and chocolate together, that's amazing. Oh, well, let's eat that with sushi.
Yeah.
No. No, keep it out of my sushi.
Yeah, they're both great. They're both great on their own. Yeah.
Exactly.
Do you think with the popularity of Dr. Aphra, and I'm right there with you guys, I was the one voting for an action figure and we're going to get her and all that. Do you think they can leverage this character into something along the lines of a continuation of a Rebel TV show in that sort of Disney XD style where they're following her around in these different adventures? Or do you think she's much better suited for the comic book world?
No, I'm gonna chop rules with a Z this one and loophole the hell out of this.
Live action.
Yeah, live, you think so?
Absolutely. Tim, you were almost there, and I think you were just being a little bit more reserved. XD, I think she's too adult of a character. She's written in too much. She's too adult of a template. Mm-hmm. To find an audience on XD, I think. But why not a Star Wars story? They've pulled off this fantastic feat now of creating a character that exists in our universe, and she doesn't need the premium characters to survive.
No.
So let's
she can be right there, live action.
Greenlight a movie. Why not? Everyone loves Han Solo, and everyone loves Indiana Jones, and she's all of that in a gorgeous package. Why not?
Or can you imagine if when, you know, Star Wars or Disney is teasing the idea of having their own streaming service, can you imagine when they go to put that in a year or two from now, when like, oh, here's our show, our kickoff show. You mean, here's the flagship show that's going to start. And we're going to have Aphra, or there's just so much fertile ground there that they could. And again, we're on a Star Wars comics podcast, and the latest and greatest thing is Dr. Aphra, and of course we're gonna want, like, you know, the rest of the Star Wars community can be like, what do you guys, just leave her in the comics, guys, like, just leave her alone.
the best thing about Aphra is that she's a character that doesn't have to conform to all of the small things they've crafted in a Star Wars universe. You can take her out and do different things with her. Mm-hmm. We see in the movies they're having issues with veering away, even with directors or the overall direction of the film, from the Star Wars construct. But I feel like this character, they could take her and put her in a movie that feels still like a Star Wars movie, but you can do very different things. I think this comic proves that they can do that. And I think with either a live action or like a Netflix style series, they could really push the envelope and get people comfortable with getting outside of that. I don't like using the word prescribed Star Wars universe, but that familiar Star Wars universe maybe is the better way to put it.
Right.
And use her as that stepping stone to get people comfortable coming outside of that bubble.
And she's a perfect stepping stone as well, because all of the archetypal, everything we love about these archetypes is there, isn't it? It's the swagger and the squashbuckle of Han is there, but there's the feisty female character like Leia who struggles with her father and all that sort of stuff. It's there. It's, mm-hmm. it's, I've been saying for a while now that Rogue One was half a step away from Star Wars. Han is a step away from Star Wars. The next time they're bold enough, they might take two steps away. Maybe Aphra feels that. Maybe she checks that box. You know, maybe she's just Star Wars enough that people recognize it, but she's fresh enough to not be constrained, like you say, inside that that quite restrictive sort of box.
Of course,
But she's there to tell us these Star Wars stories and have fun with it. And it can be what Star Wars... There's a real threat that Star Wars could stop being fun because of the temptation to sort of lean too much on some of the gloomier aspects, like Luke's name, it's time for the Jedi in. And we could just get back to this thing where you've got a character that can just run rampant across the screen for 2 hours and just have an adventure.
Mm-hmm. Well,
have no tie to the Skywalker saga and none of that weight.
Well, that's just it. And now with the different, with the new streaming platform coming out and with the movies and the comics and the books, and they can go in all these different directions and do different stuff. It's not like when Phantom Menace came out and it's like everybody crapped on anybody our age, crapped on Jar Jar Binks saying, oh, he was horrible. And Lucas goes, well, I made it for the kids. I'm like, no, you had all that trade talk and political stuff. That was not a children's movie. Like, so I understand what you had to do, and you crammed everything into this one plate. Again, you've got peanut butter cups and sushi and everything else on this one plate. Yeah, I love it all, but whew, man, it's hard to get in one sitting. But now they don't have to do that. They can have, oh, here's 13 episodes on the new Disney Netflix thing. Disney Flix.
It would be such a shame to waste Aphra on a TV show, I think, because she could do so well with a big budget and that dramatic ending where you think, oh, I can't wait 2 years, or I can't wait for another one, rather than like binge watch it and forget some of the, you know, Tim, you just watched Defenders. I finished Defenders. Have you completed it yet?
Oh, yeah.
Defenders?
Yeah.
Binging through that, some of the finer pieces get lost, I think. And if you've got just a 2-hour thing to deal with, it's easier to revisit and you don't miss so much, do you?
Or they can roll it out like they're doing, I know the other franchise, Star Trek. They're coming out with, I know they're on the CBS, but with their new show coming out in the next couple weeks, they're rolling it out 1 week at a time so people can savor it. And I'm sure if they came out with a Star Wars show like Rebels, and every week there's a lot of us that recap it and watch it and really get into the minutia of the episode, then we move on to the next. But like you said, Mark, if whenever something is given to me, here's the whole series, I miss so much. I just like, oh, did I, what did I,
what was the other point I was going to make about Aphra? Oh no, the other point I was going to make, this is, I'm going to just go off the comic book focus for a second, because we're talking about the streaming service. I put it out on the Kessel Run this morning, for it just briefly hinted at it, but I've emailed Peter at Slash Film Daily about a comment he made on his podcast about the streaming service. Actually, he was talking about the Star Wars anthology naming convention and how Lucasfilm very quickly rebranded as a Star Wars story for films like Han Solo and Rogue One. They dropped the anthology thing. Now, he was saying on his podcast he would like to see an anthology movie. So a 2-hour movie, but made up of lots of small movies by different directors like Quentin Tarantino, Steven Spielberg, looking at different characters. A bit like this all came off of the back of A Certain Point of View, the book.
Yep.
Seems to me like they rebranded the Star Wars anthology film series as a Star Wars story, so that they could free up the brand Star Wars Anthology for the streaming service and do exactly what Peter was talking about on his show, but an hour movie every week by top-tier directors and even looking at some of the premium characters.
Kind of like a Forces of Destiny, kind of like the Forces of Destiny, but like full hour, full production, full directions, full...
Huge budgets.
Love that.
Huge budgets, right?
Yeah.
Doesn't it work?
But I love spending Disney's money. They took all mine. Like
the model's there.
I forked a lot to them.
Yeah.
the model's already there. They're doing it with Marvel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But instead of you following Daredevil for 8 or 12 episodes, you might follow, you might spend some time with Yoda on Dagobah.
Sure.
That is a really cool idea. That's because they seem to always want to be, at least in Disney with Marvel and Star Wars, always pushing the envelope on how to tell the same stories but in a different style.
Yeah.
And this is an awesome way to do it, because from a certain point of view, I'm really looking forward to that, to hearing some of the stories. And we got some information about that recently,
yeah,
about what the individual stories are going to be. But just transporting that and using even as a launch pad for Aphra or something to that effect, where you have an hour Aphra just to see how people like the live action nature of it. And then, you know, we jump off that into a film or something. I love that.
So they've already got the brand there, and they got the we all know what Star Wars Anthology is. But it works really well as a series of short films, and they can do it. They could pepper the timeline completely. Go back and tell a prequel story about a Jedi, or come forward and tell a story about Aphra, or drop in any. You pick any number of characters. Phasma, Gwendolyn Christie, I'm sure would do an hour episode about Phasma. Oh,
yeah.
Daisy Ridley, I'm sure would do an hour about Rey. You could do all sorts of stuff on that platform, and Disney already have the parts in place. So this streaming service, I think, is being motivated to do something Star Wars, and it's going to be something proprietary because they'll want to draw the audience to it. So just going to be like, this is where you can find your films now.
That's what I was mentioning. When they release, they need something to, here it is. Here's the new, here's our, not the flagship, but maybe here's the,
yeah, this is what you can't you miss. Have to come.
Because yeah, here's what you don't own already.
It's no longer about, I get Netflix because it's got, you know, I'm into Ozark at the moment. I get Netflix because of that. They have to be able to produce something that you cannot miss. It's not just I fancy seeing that. It's got to be, like, this is what I live for. How can I not have this service? It's like oxygen.
It has to be a Star Wars related feature of some sort, I think.
Of course.
Yeah. Like, because the Marvel, we get it 3 times a year, and we got all the TV shows and all that. Star Wars is what could make that special. Something very different.
Yeah.
I think that's the way they got
to
go.
Mark my words. Star Wars Anthology.
And that's where Marvel is getting to the point where it's like, I don't get to it all. Which is, and especially the visual stuff. Like, I haven't started Defenders. I'm like, well, I got to finish up, you know, I mean, Luke Cage. I'm like, oh, do I want to start Iron Fist? It's like, holy. Yeah, I'm just
Tim and I are giving a seizure, you a
I saw two heads just shaking.
We're giving you a very non-verbal no.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move back into some comic talk, because I don't want to drive too many people away with TV theories. All right, Lando, let's just touch on this briefly, because I want to get to Tim's piece about the main Star Wars Last Jedi comic. But I caught up on Lando because a lot of people were sort of recommending that I read the Lando miniseries, and I wasn't going to do it, but I'm glad I did. We spoke earlier about the fluff category, how Phasma might possibly fit into that, but Darth Maul definitely fit into that, where it didn't really add anything to the character. They kind of, where he started and where he ended in that book, it was inconsequential to the character before or after. Lando, I felt, was completely the opposite. And not really just for the Lando character, who I thought was fun and charming and written very well in the image of Billy Dee, but Lobot.
Yes.
Yes.
Lobot blew my mind in this book. I can tell it had the same effect on you when you read it, yeah?
Oh, definitely. That was my favorite part about this whole, I think it was a 5-issue run.
That's right.
It's, because I was expecting a lot of Lando, and I quite like the character of Lando. I'm looking forward to seeing him in Han Solo. But the expansion of Lobot and what he was doing, that was the best part of the book. I fully agree with you there, without giving too much away.
Yeah, we should kind of preserve some of the...
Well, because you're recommending it. Yeah, absolutely. I think, but also, too, it shows, because we see in Empire, how Lando depends on Lobot.
Mm-hmm.
To execute his betrayal of Vader. Again, spoilers if you haven't seen Empire. But anyway.
If you haven't seen Empire, please leave. I mean, what are you doing?
Door's right there.
But it just shows, okay, we understand he's got these things on his ears and you don't know quite what he is, but it just builds a little bit, oh, I get it now. And then now there wasn't any question when you watched Empire, but now it cements it going, oh, that's where that loyalty mm-hmm. comes from.
Yeah. And so. I think one of these comic book runs, if they can be successful at adding another layer of interest and another layer to a character that we only got a little bit of, like we've got action figures, we know Lobot, they've expanded him in different material in the Legends line and all that. But coming back to the new canon, it's nice to get update on these characters that we're familiar with, especially from a movie like Empire, which is my favorite Star Wars movie. Yeah, but yeah. I just love that, just getting that little bit of information. And that's what I think those should be about. It's never going to bring, I don't think, the amount of depth that maybe we want to a character. They're always going to leave most of that for the film, I think. But if we can get these off characters that we're never really going to see focused in on a film, I think that's what they can be really successful at with these. And this is where that really hits.
It's almost like they were at Disney. It's like, hey, we just bought Lucasfilm, and they're like, okay, and you, we're gonna redo the comics, and we're putting it under the Marvel banner, and like, okay, you over there, what do you want to do? I want to do a Lobot run. No. All right, can I do a Lando run and have a minute? Yes. Okay, Gary, you go off and do that.
Yeah. It really works. It really works. Yes, I realize now that I've kind of backed myself into a corner because I can't really explain precisely.
Yep.
What's happened in that book and just how effective it is. But I can say that when I watch Empire again, and I haven't watched it since I read the run, and I agree with you, Tim, it's my favourite Star Wars movie, it will very much colour the way I interpret those two characters,
mm-hmm.
the dynamic on show there, and mm-hmm. just how tragic it is. And
yep.
I'm looking forward to the Han Solo for a multitude of reasons. But one of those reasons is the prospect that maybe Lobot might be in there somewhere.
Mm-hmm. And he's got to be.
Wouldn't that be cool if they just sort of do that? Wouldn't that blow minds?
Right.
If he's in there and he's the version we recognize from the comic book run
mm-hmm.
on screen, wouldn't that be cool? And it is very much it'll be the ripples out in both directions from that book's place in canon. When we see Lando before, it will colour the way we view him. And, mm-hmm. and when we see them interact in Empire Strikes Back, it will colour reviewings of that episode now because of what they've done in this book. That is quality writing at play there.
We went over this right in the beginning, and when Mark approached me about putting this episode, this podcast together at TSW Comics. And this is before Afra really got up and running, and we were getting ready for the new Vader launch. And like, so we, I was like, yeah, I'm really enjoying this new Afra thing and this and that. I'm like, but my first words were like, oh yeah, like grab Lando. And then Mark's like, Lando, like out of all the stuff out there now, it's like, no, trust me. You'll be surprised. It's one of those ones. If you have time, pick it up. Grab it, read it. You don't have to worry about it interfering with anything that's going on. You can just, oh, I know who Lando is. Oh, yeah, there's that guy with that stuff on his head. Okay, good.
Yeah, it reads well in a trade, too.
Yes.
Like back to back. So you pick it up in a $14, $15 trade. Yeah, mm-hmm. you just write through it. Yeah, it reads better like that, I think, actually.
It does, really, because I can't see the filler. And there was, Rob, when you and I were reading Maul, and we're going through Maul every month, it's like, oh, this is one of those issues I would barely notice as I was burning through a trade. Yeah. It looks like it's not a waste of space, but it's filler in a book. It's there for pacing.
There's stunning panels, but
on their own, it's not a very satisfying read. But then, I'll be picking up these mini runs now as trades. Like this month, I'm probably going to pick up Han. I've only read the first issue, but I'm going to pick up Han. And read the whole thing because I can do it all in one sitting and it'll flow nicely and I won't have that painful wait every month.
I remember listening to the Talk Star Wars, the regular show, and I heard Naked Steve saying, oh, I would rather have Han do this in a movie because you guys were talking about the Han Solo movie. And I'm like, I'm yelling at my iPhone saying, yeah, pick up the comic, Steve. Right there. That's your story.
Yeah. Steve hasn't got the focus to read a comic book.
Oh, no, no.
He'd be off chasing a butterfly somewhere. Yeah, if you can't even get clothing on.
Yeah.
It's so frightening when that camera activates during a podcast. Right. Let's move on to some stuff. Unless we've got anything to add to the Lando, I think we've pretty much said everything we can without spoiling it, right? I'd advise picking it up. If you haven't already read the Lando run, you will not be disappointed. It is fantastic. Okay, Tim, this section is pretty much all yours because this is a news story that you've written up and put on the site on talkstars.co.uk about the Last Jedi book, which is just really capturing my imagination. Do you want to tell us a little bit about this story, Tim?
Yeah, definitely. So Stars.com, I think middle of September here, which is a couple of days ago for us, they announced a new one-shot comic that's coming to us from Ben Acker and Ben Blacker with art by Mike Mayhew, all whom have written and drawn within the Star Wars universe already. So we're coming with some veterans here. It's a, like I said, a one-shot comic. It's titled Star Wars The Last Jedi Storms of Crate Number 1. And this is joining the Journey to the Last Jedi line of books here. And it's going to focus in on Luke and Leia journeying to Crate in search of a new rebel base. That's the general premise of it. And the interesting thing about this that I really liked is the cover. They showed us the cover here. It looks awesome. We've got Luke wielding the blue lightsaber. We've got Leia, and we've got Crate in the background with that oh so familiar red pop that we're seeing from most of the stuff in The Last Jedi. And what was really interesting for me about this, and this is kind of what I threw up on the website, was they call this, or they title it as, we're going back to the Galactic Civil War, relating that to The Last Jedi. So we're trying to connect up, or they're trying to connect up, the original trilogy timeline with The Last Jedi, showing that there was some sort of impact within the original trilogy timeline for what we're going to see in this upcoming movie. And I think that's really cool. They're going to go down that path. And I was trying to place exactly when this was because they're a bit ambiguous as to the timeline. They're calling it the Galactic Civil War. To me, it looks like it's probably in that familiar Marvel area of Between a New Hope and Empire Strikes Back. We've got Luke with the blue lightsaber. We've got Leia here. It just seems like, at least to me, that they're out hunting for that base post the Battle of Yavin. So my guess is, if I had to take a wild stab at this, is it's going to come between this and Hoth. And for whatever transpires potentially in this comic book, they end up choosing Hoth. Because we know Leia's got a bit of history from the new Leia book that came out, Leia, Princess of Alderaan by Claudia Gray. So we do have some backing there. That takes place about 6 years before this comic book drops in the timeline. So it's interesting they're starting to build up that Crate actually has some importance to it beyond just The Last Jedi. We have Leia having a lot of history with it, and that's potentially why we see them on Crate building a resistance base, or at least at some point in the movie.
That's amazing. Yeah. Sorry, Rob, go on.
You know, I was just going to say, I like that it's... Star Wars does this a lot where they have... where people complain that everything ties in, but there's nothing wrong with having this little sprinkle from the past pop up a little bit later. And for the comic book reader, because we're like, oh look at this, I just read about this there, it's on the big screen, it's almost a feeling of, I know I got more out of this movie than I anticipated. Yeah. Because I happen to read the comics.
Does that make any sense? Yeah, of course it does. Yeah, I mean, what this is continuity, isn't it, Tim? It's going right back, and like you say, it's dropping the pin in the OT just after the Battle of Yavin, and it's linking it straight into what we're about to see now, some three and a bit decades later.
Yeah.
And it's retroactive continuity in the best possible way, where it's taking a new element and dropping it back in canon. So it looks like when you go back, it doesn't matter if you come to this franchise, like Rob Charlie could come to this later and she could discover, this was all one big plan. It's all one big design. Because it's intelligent enough to look like it's the seeds have been sown early on. And I'm sure the age of this base is going to be important in The Last Jedi. The fact that they're going back to, maybe it's a last resort, maybe it's a well-kept secret, maybe it's a source of income, being minerals, is it a spice mine, is it something that, you know, I've heard rumours that this is somewhere the Rebellion set up this mine to sort of finance their operations, and now with Hosnian Prime's destruction, the Resistance aren't getting the support they need, and this might be right. resources for the resistance to sort of keep their head above water. But there's some mm-hmm. speculation and some rumor mixed in there, but this is really exciting. And this comes out after
December 27th,
so it's spoiler free then.
Yeah, yes. So that's why I think there's going to be some sort of implication for The Last Jedi, for us comic book readers and the fans of the continuity. I don't think it's going to have any weight towards The Last Jedi itself, but because it comes out after, I feel like there's going to be small spoilers within this comic book for The Last Jedi, whether it's just what the planet is relative to, you know, whether it's a source of income or something to that effect, where it's revealed why Leia and why we're actually here on Crait. I think there's going to be something in there, and that's why it's coming out, because this would really be better suited if it didn't have some sort of spoiler in it coming out the week or two before The Last Jedi.
Right.
And just reminding people, oh, hey, we're going into this. Here's Crait, giving people that ability to come in with that little bit of extra knowledge, kind of like some that context. Catalyst type. Yeah. And so that's why I'm thinking that it's going to be have a bit more of that continuity building in than we're used to for these comic books that are building into this. Like even with the Phasma, I think it's going to have implications for her character development, but it's not going to be a spoilerific portion of her arc. It's going to build into it where this could have implications for why Leia's chosen to have the resistance base here.
Good point.
And I think that goes also, yeah, sorry.
No, I was just going to say it could be anything. It could be an escape route, a tunnel, this or that, or mm-hmm. something, or how they power the base, where the shields are, where it could be anything in this that maybe we'll release it the week after the movie comes out, because and also with the splash, The Last Jedi on the cover, from what I'm looking at, I don't know if you could have that right before the movie. It's like, oh, the movie's releasing in 2 days, and oh, I got this comic in my hand. I got it. Like, it's you're just asking for for social media trouble there. Like
it's the false Friday 2 again.
Yeah, exactly.
I really think at the end of this is pure theory, pure speculation, that they're gonna have a conversation that says we're gonna actually go to Hoth and set up shop there. But maybe this is somewhere we could come back to in the future. That's how I think that's going to end.
Yeah.
And then whatever else builds into that. Like, I think that's how they're going to build or that bridge that continuity between A New Hope and Into Empire, and how it has implications for 34 years later.
Yeah, exactly. She might say, let's go somewhere with a nice soft surface and we can practice against walkers just in case we ever have to face the walker. That might be a bit too much foreshadowing.
Yeah.
It's going to be a bit cheeky, I think.
Yeah.
On the nose.
And this, did you say this Crait may have been mentioned in the Leia, in Claudia Gray's Leia book?
I've just started Leia Princess of Alderaan there. And there is a mention of Crait. She actually, I don't want to give too much away, but she actually does journey to Crait. The book takes place about 3 years before the Battle of Yavin. So this comic book and her interaction, I'll say, with Crait and what's going on there is about 6 years apart. So there is some world building in the Princess Leia book, the Claudia Gray one, that potentially could be referenced in this comic book as well. So there's a few different layers of continuity that they're building up as we go into The Last Jedi with this planet. So it seems to have some significance with Leia.
So yeah, so coming at it from the Leia perspective, we can rule out any Force connections with Crait. So there's not likely to be a temple or anything like that. Okay.
No, I can give this away. It's not really a huge spoiler. There was a rebel outpost, a small one on there at one point. So there is a history with the rebellion there. And then I won't give away how all that transpires and what kind of builds into that, but there is some good continuity in there. Well, that I'm curious if it'll be referenced in this or not.
That's interesting. All right. Well, not very long to wait.
No.
So three different layers of media that tie Crait together with books, comics, and a film.
They're really investing in that. Maybe they're trying to drive up real estate value. It's I'm looking forward to it. I'm a little bit confused, though, with the terminology. So it's a one-shot, but it's also a number one.
Yeah, so they always do this. It's immensely confusing. Yeah, one-shots will get a number one on it, but it's only a single issue. It's just, I don't know if that's how they do it, but it's not, sometimes they'll tag it with a zero issue.
Right.
Sometimes it's number one.
I suppose number one has a specific connotation to amateur comic collectors, doesn't it? They might think, "Oh, I'll buy six of them and put them, I'll bag and board the lot."
It's like the Cassian and K2 was tagged with a number one as well, and it was a one shot.
Yep, and the 3PO and all the other ones they had.
Oh well, I will be picking this up without a doubt.
Definitely.
Thank you for that, Tim. And you should, if you haven't already read Tim's coverage of this sort of news and Rob's reviews of the comic books, and I suggest doing so, head over to talkstarwars.co.uk/books and you'll find all that stuff aggregated there. All right. Shall we actually let me take a quick break and we'll drop in our little ad spot here, and then when we come back we'll have our conversation about Darth Vader issue number 5. If you'd like to support what we do here at Talk Star Wars, you can do so by becoming a TSW sponsor. For as little as £1 per month, given securely via PayPal, you'll help us keep the lights on here at Talk Star Wars. When you become a TSW sponsor, we will automatically make you a TSW VIP. As a VIP, you'll get access to an exclusive stream of content that provides you with a daily podcast called the TSW Kessel Run, membership to the TSW VIP Facebook group, priority releases of shows such as the TSW Toy Box and TSW Comics. You'll also get priority access to the TSW Feature Com series and weekly Facebook Live and AMA sessions. There are also newsletters and a monthly prize draw. Head to talkstarwars.co.uk/support and become a TSW sponsor today, and the Force will be with you always. Okay, we're back. Right, let's talk about the marquee item for the evening. The 10 out of 10, the unilaterally rated. I'm taking the advantage of being a moderator. This is a 10 out of 10 book, Robcast. I will not have you say it otherwise. Darth Vader, issue number 5. Guys, how good was this book?
You hit it. 10 out of 10, man. Unbelievable. He talked about adding depth to a character.
And canon. Adding to the character, adding to canon. Blowing my mind. Goodness me, it was fantastic.
I know the pages you're talking about, and I mentioned to you before that I picked it up from the comic book store, and then I read it, and then I put it on my nightstand, and I looked at the time, and I'm thinking, it's... I mean, it's nighttime for me, so, Mark's probably gone to bed. I'll wait till tomorrow to message him, and then you had the Kessel Run all about it by the time I got up to go to work next day.
Yeah, it's kind of eating away at me.
In the Star Wars, 10 out of 10.
Yes, that is a rare thing for you, sir, and I appreciate your tolerance of breaking your rule, but it does... something that we've spoke about a couple of times tonight, it does something where it does ripple through both the character in ways we can discuss in just a second, but also through canon with the way, and I think it's probably fair to say, look, we're going
to
speak freely about this book, right?
So if you
haven't read the book, big spoiler run. If you haven't read the book yet, stop the podcast now, come back later. But please don't listen on if you haven't, because we're just going to spoil the crap out of this thing. So please back away slowly now and come back later once you've read it, and you will not regret reading this thing. So spoiler warning issued. We can now move forward guilt-free. What this does for the Kyber Crystal thing alone for me is just humongous, huge. Right, Rob, let's start with you. What do you think? What are your thoughts on this book?
Well, I loved it. I know exactly what you're speaking of, and when Vader, I guess we can just jump right to it.
Yes, do it.
Vader has the lightsaber. He's got it from a Jedi who was the Barish Vow he was on.
Yeah,
that's how they're tying him into surviving. The Jedi he acquired the lightsaber off of, that's how they loophole their way into saying he got out of Order 66.
Yes.
Because of the Barish Vow. But we've been over the Barish Vow before. And so here he is. He finds the Jedi. He finally defeats him. He gets this crystal, and the crystal pushes back, which to me, and those two pages where we get treated to a dozen panels, individual panels of how, and it gave Vader it showed Vader the light, and it showed Vader the options. It showed him, Tim, do you want to, who's going to take the reins of describing why we love this book so much? There are, I know exactly what you're getting at. There are a couple pages.
Yeah, Tim, do you want to comment?
Yeah, well, it's, well, for me here is, one, going back, and this comic book can't be read in isolation. One, you got to read right into this.
Yep.
And the thing that I love about these few panels, we're talking about the panels once Vader has the Kyber and he tries to corrupt it. It pushes back, like you said, Rob, and he gets a view of him approaching Palpatine and striking him down and then revisiting Obi-Wan.
Whoa, the powerful but when he ignites the lightsaber, it's still green.
It's still green, yeah.
So you have Vader with a green saber, which, anyway. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. And the thing with that I love about this, you see Obi-Wan, you see what could have been. But for the first time, we're seeing Vader struggle with the light side and the dark side. Mm-hmm. Every iteration that we've got of him, he is, with the exception, I think, of the battle with Ahsoka in Rebels, you don't ever question his loyalty to the dark side. Here you start to really see that. You see that vulnerability in Darth Vader, in Anakin Skywalker, I'll even say, that we haven't seen in, like, at least in proper canon now, anywhere. And that's right. Why I love this. It explored a different element. Like in Rogue One, we got the Vader we all wanted. Yep. In the build up to him turning to Vader, we got to see Anakin Skywalker struggle with the dark side while staying on the light. Here he's in the dark side struggling with the light. This is something that we saw with Ben Solo in The Force Awakens. We're seeing so much here in so few panels. It's brilliant what Charles Soule has done with the writing here and how he's built this character to a point in 5 short issues. We do not see this very often in the comic book world.
No, absolutely. And in Star Wars storytelling as well, he's been given probably the biggest gift, like the juiciest gift of someone given him this thing and said, look, here's, run at this thing. Add to canon. You're adding a spoke to the wheel. You're developing this Kyber thing. It just, giving that Kyber agency enough to say to Vader, no, stop, think about your options. I mean, it's not done in dialogue, and that, so the way I'm sort of framing this now is odd, but what they've managed to do with this beautiful narrative and these wonderful illustrations is give the Kyber agency as if it's saying, please stop and think about what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
There is hope. You can go back. And he explores, it's almost like he's being shown a vision, like Rey's Force vision of an option, a way that he can stop everything dead, get what he wanted from the outset when he tried to make the deal with Padme on Mustafar, tried to say this is to save life at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. He had an option to dial everything back. You can't unkill those kids, but he had the option to dial back his story, his path. And the other thing it did as well, the agency element for the Kyber crystal was fantastic. The other thing it did as well was show that Anakin perhaps expects Obi-Wan to still be alive.
Mm-hmm.
But the planet we see him, Obi-Wan, on in Vader's vision shows he has no idea where he is. Because right. The way that's illustrated is clearly not Tatooine.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's framing the fact that Obi-Wan's position is completely masked from Vader, but that agency thing. And then it's so, those few panels, every moment that shows, every illustration is an incredibly painful moment for Anakin.
Yeah.
And it just it's almost justification for how this guy's ended up in this situation. And when you see the turmoil that character's been through. Wonderful
now, stuff. Did you love, as much as I did, the fact that they had one of his lenses blow off and you can see the mask on one side and the human character underneath it in the other? They did this in Rebels,
yes,
in the season 2 finale when he fought Ahsoka, and they actually had the voice actor come back and voice Anakin for that scene on top of Vader. And it's so powerful to me to see the man behind the mask while he's struggling with this. Half his face is almost the Anakin, the light side. The other half is Vader, the dark side.
Yeah.
And they play with that in the illustrations here. I thought that was, it's so subtle, but it's so brilliant seeing his pain in his eyes underneath that mask. That's a sight of Vader we rarely get to see.
You talk about balance of the Force. I mean, that if we constantly ask the question, what is it? What does it mean? Anakin's is balance. He is the balance. Mm-hmm. And that's what balance is. It's this tumultuous relationship between what's right and what's wrong. And with Anakin, it's personified to the extreme. And yeah, you're right. We might as well have been looking at the yin yang there, the black and the white, because it's that perfect balance between the character of Vader and the character of Anakin. And I adore that about this character. I love when you can see, even in the OT, if you go back and rewatch it, you can see moments where Anakin's kind of peeking through the exchange in Empire with Palpatine over the hologram. And when he confronts Luke on Bespin, I see Anakin in that, in those moments. This is Anakin trying to, he's reaching out for someone for help, woefully misguided, but he's reaching out for help. It's not Vader. Vader was in that corridor on the Tantive at the end of Rogue One. That's Vader. And there's very little Anakin in there. That's the monster of his own making, right?
What's amazing to me, and with this character and what they've done with it, is 1977, there I am at the drive-in with my mother and father watching New Hope for the first time projected. So I'm old, as of the age where I got seen it on the screen. And here we are 40 years later, and there's still more to this character. And I know we're building up this one issue in this one comic, but that's what it's done. And Mark, you've said this before. I'm not fast and loose with my tens. Like my tens aren't out there. But and is it because I'm a Star Wars fan? Obviously, because I'm so. There's so much, it adds so much more to this character. And here we are, just 40 years later, and it's like, oh, you like that dish? Well, here's a little bit of gravy. Oh, it's just too much. It's just too wonderful.
Now, these two splash pages, while he's corrupting the Kyber crystal here, they go through every painful moment that we saw in the prequels up until this point. And it ends too with just Palpatine's face.
Yeah.
Like I love seeing that back and forth. And then the way they've illustrated the flashback moments are almost in black and white and the present moments are in color. It's just so well drawn. Well, I have some issues with the art, but it's so well depicted in these few panels that you just get all of it. There's not a single word on these two splash pages, and you get everything from the tortured soul of Anakin to what eventually comes out the other side and is Vader.
Yeah.
Like this is almost the transition point. We see the end of Revenge of the Sith as him turning into Vader. It's almost actually this point in time where he finally decides, all right, I am Darth Vader now. Anakin is dead. And there's so much of that. I think in the Vader book, if I recall right, there was also a point in time where he kind of battled himself in his head and eventually kills Anakin. I there's some other point here, but within the original Vader run.
Right.
I find that this more so than anything is that turning point for Anakin until we get to Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
Like, this is such a significant moment to depict in comic book for this character. It's unbelievable what they're able to accomplish here.
And that last line of Vader's as well, I think, is isn't it something like, this is all there is? Isn't that the last line he has when he's struggling to sort of bleed that crystal? This is all there is.
Yes.
I find that so heartbreaking. And when you think about that final frame of that image, like you said, Tim, of Palpatine's face, that could either be it's almost used like punctuation. It's either this is the cause, this is either the cause of Anakin's downfall or Vader's salvation. You can interpret that both ways. I think that he represents one thing or the other to Vader at this point in time.
Yeah, it's definitely no accident that it's drawn like that.
No, it's a great book.
Ambiguous.
It really caught me off. It pushed me off guard because I got completely lost in it, and then the bit where he first confronts and ignites that green lightsaber, I thought, what's going on? I had to go back. I thought, I've got to go back because clearly I've missed something. But then I realized I hadn't missed anything. It was just, and then I got the chance to sort of absorb all that again. It was sublime. Sublime. Yeah. Definitely 10 out of 10. Absolutely.
So the one other thing that got me on this comic book, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong here, but at the very start, when the Emperor is telling Vader, I've pre-programmed your ship to take you to a specific place to corrupt this crystal, and that place happens to be Mustafar,
mm-hmm.
where he's experienced this great pain, your greatest loss. And is this the first mention in canon, in the new canon, of Mustafar being a bit more than just where Anakin died, in air quotes here, that it has some bigger meaning to the Sith rather than just being... I'm trying to think back to Clone Wars, and I'm trying to think to the visual dictionary of Rogue One and what we got out of Vader's castle, and if that was actually mentioned. But because this seems to imply that this has Mustafar has a much deeper meaning for the Sith. Or am I interpreting that wrong?
No, I think you're absolutely right. I think in the visual guide for Rogue One, I think it might be in there, but I've assimilated this information somewhere. I think it's a visual guide that Palpatine put, or Sidious put Vader on Mustafar at the point where he fell, because that's a painful point for him. And he's almost putting him there as punishment. Like, you need to suffer. Immerse yourself in the dark side. Mm-hmm. This is your penitence. But I think now what I'm gathering is that there's some significant dark side activity at that point as well. Maybe that was created by the fall of Anakin, the dark side activity, or maybe it's something more ancient. But
I think you're right. The line is, deep beneath its surface rests a locus for the dark side of the Force. So whether that was created by Anakin at that point, or whether there's something bigger, because this eventually goes on through context in Rebels, and I believe Ahsoka, the book as well, is that post Order 66, this is where Jedis go to die, and there's a lot more to this. But I'm wondering if this is the first seed to that idea that there's actually more here than just a place where Anakin fell, where the Emperor pushes Vader to go to torture him, and that where eventually they end up taking Jedi that survived the Purge and torturing them. And this is where we see Vader in Rogue One. So there's a lot of significance to that, because as far as canon goes, this may be hinting at a little more as to what we're going to see Charles Soule build in this comic book. Now, I agree with you, contextually, there's some other mentions of it, but I'm still struggling whether or not this is the first mention that there's something bigger to this for the Sith.
Yeah, you might be right. It does feel right. Sorry, Rob.
But possibly. I've always taken Mustafar as a place where Palpatine just keeps Anakin or Vader, because that's where he lost. Physically, he was destroyed. He was burnt, and that can't be a pleasant memory. And this is where he believes he killed Padme, and this is where his old mentor beat him in a duel, and his ego was torched as well. So it's almost like you just keep him fuming. It's like, it's like whatever goes wrong in your life. That's why, that's why people don't, maybe if they lost a loved one, they visit the cemetery once a year, but they don't go every day because they don't want to be
too much agony.
Yeah, exactly. And if they keep Anakin in agony, you keep him as Darth Vader and you don't lose him to the light.
There's an element I've mentioned a number of times. I think we'll wrap up. I'm conscious of the time, Tim, but so we'll wrap up in just a sec. But there's an element from, I think it was from Shadows of the Empire, and I've mentioned this a few times on different shows, but Anakin was, or Vader was using the dark side of the Force to heal himself in that little pod that we see on the Exequator. He was using the dark side to heal himself. And he used an image of Obi-Wan to enrage himself. And when he was that angry, the dark side was more effective and he started to heal. And then the joy he felt at his results opened up to the light side, and the results started to fade. So here we see Anakin in Rogue One in the Bacta tube. Is that what he's doing? Are we learning that the locus of the dark side on Mustafar, is it some, and the element of torture for Anakin being there as Vader, is that something that's fueling his attempts to try and rebuild himself physically, perhaps?
Yeah.
Because you've been dangled this carrot by Palpatine, isn't it, about using the Force to sort of extend life, prolong life, and cheat death. So maybe he's trying to crack the code, and Mustafar is the best place for him to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds... Yeah, I really like that. There's so much more to this, and I hope we get them diving a bit deeper. And they've dangled a little bit in various different, whether it was Rogue One or here. They need to dive a bit deeper into this now and build this up, because we're in a time frame where they do have the ability to explore these ideas in more depth, mm-hmm. and they will have implications for things further on. But the character of Vader, outside of what we could get in some anthology film or something like that, or a Star Wars story film, that character is, we're not going to see much more development here. And this is the opportunity, I think, to do that, to build that story. It's the books and the comic books that are going to build Vader from now on.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, agreed. And I think too, I think with this, I don't know what's with this run. We're getting the explanation of how he bleeds, how he makes the red lightsaber, and then we finish this amazing book, mm-hmm. and then it shows the cover for the next book, and there's an Inquisitor. So boom, like, it's just
love
mind
it.
Blowing.
I know.
What are they doing? So, honestly,
yes, October 4th, I believe, that's when that's going on. So
yep,
yeah.
Well, yeah, that's I was going to bring that up. I'm glad you did, because flipping to the back of this and like, what can they do next year? Oh, now we're getting the origin story of the Inquisitors.
Exactly.
Fantastic.
Good stuff. Right. Do we want to give some final thoughts on this book, and then we will wrap this rather lengthy episode up?
Yes.
So, Tim, let's start with you. Final thoughts on Darth Vader number 5, or Darth Vader, the run so far, in your estimation?
Yeah, I'm going to go with the run here. Issues 1 through 5 are a must-read, almost back-to-back. I find, again, these are much more exciting individual issues. But as a whole, this story, this arc, this 5-issue arc is absolutely brilliant. The stuff before with Darth Vader set between A New Hope and Empire was really good. This is next level. I would have to say this is probably one of the, if not the best, 5 issues written for Star Wars comics, for adding to continuity, for adding to a character that has so many complexities that I didn't even realize needed to be explored. And what Charles Soule here, he's one of my favorite comic book writers. He does the Poe Dameron series. He's done, I believe he did the Lando series as well. He's a magician in this book. And there's so much here. And if you're a fan of Vader, if you loved what you've seen in Rogue One and you want more of this character, outside of the books, there's the Lords of the Sith. This is where you need to be. I am one of our co-hosts on the other podcast, or my other podcast. He's a huge Vader fan. He praises that Vader and Anakin are his character, and I'm right there with him. This is unbelievable. Like we've said through this explores that yin and yang of Vader, of Anakin, of that true torture of this character and what we see behind the mask going forward into the original trilogy. This is a must read for any Star Wars fan.
Well said, sir. Rob?
Well, as we, you know, my benchmark, I say it all the time, you know, it's, you measure out of all the comic books on the planet. A lot of people measure things like to The Dark Knight or the outstanding books. For this one, this run, these, like, as far as if you had this as a trade paperback, like Tim said, 1 through 5, this does for Darth Vader what Dark Knight did for Batman. Mm-hmm. And if you're a comic book fan, and I hope so, if you're listening to the show, that should just say it. I don't think I have to go anything more than that. Again, I'm not fast and loose with them, but yeah, this is a 10.
Yep, absolutely. There's not really much more for me to add to what you gentlemen have said. It is very high on my list of mm-hmm. outstanding pieces of fiction connected to Star Wars and this new expanded storytelling, alongside little things like Perfect Weapon by Delilah mm-hmm. S. Dawson
yep.
and Bloodline by the wonderful Claudia Gray. This does something for Vader I didn't think was possible. It's elevating the art form of comic books, and it's doing so much for Star Wars canon, just in general terms. What it's adding to Star Wars canon in terms of the Barrish Vowel, Bleeding Crystals, all of that stuff wrapped up inside the turmoil of Vader. Sublime, absolutely sublime. Yeah. And if you're not reading the Vader run, rectify that immediately.
Well, of course. And then I should just add one more thing. It's almost like if you're not a Batman fan and someone hands you The Dark Knight, you're going to be entertained. You're like, oh, this is mm-hmm. your 10. Same thing with this Vader. If you're not a Star Wars fan and you pick up okay, this is your 10. Like, no, obviously, I mean, like, it just does that so much. If you're like, I thought I knew everything there was to know about Vader, and no, apparently not.
No, I think we all had that feeling.
Yeah.
After flipping back a few pages, did I really just read that? It's just amazing. All right, let's wrap this thing up then. We'll come back next week. I think we get, well, we're obviously going to look at the next issue of Darth Vader and whatever else we pick up in the meantime. Tim, I sincerely hope that you'll be able to join us again, maybe next month.
I would love it.
Perfect. We will make it. We will make it work if everybody's happy with that. Right, let's get out of here because I know, Tim, you've got commitments. Rob, where can people find you when you're not on this
When I'm not on here, you can find me on the TSW Roundtable. That's a monthly show on Talk Star Wars. Also, I got you can find me on Twitter at RobertMMCast for all my stuff there. I also do a Under the Dome series for my R2-D2 build. Summer's been a little busy, but there's going to be some new stuff, exciting stuff coming out in September. And also on September 30th, October 1st, I will be in Hamilton, Ontario at the Hamilton Comic Con. So if you're around, tweet at me. The rest of you's there and I'll meet up. And also on the 14th and 15th of October, I will also be in London, Ontario for their Comic Con. So if you are on that side of the Golden Horseshoe, as we call it down here in Southern Ontario, you can tweet at me and we'll meet up and we'll talk Star Wars.
Hey. Look how that worked out. Tim, where can people find you, mate?
You guys can find me on Twitter at TheNerdRM. You can also find me under the umbrella of the Star Wars Commonwealth at The Nerd Room. That's a podcast that myself and a few other guys do. We do talk a lot of Star Wars, but we also dabble in Marvel and DC there, do a lot of movie reviews, stuff like that, collecting. We have a huge, huge focus in on Star Wars collecting on that podcast. And you can also catch me writing on the Talk Star Wars website and also on our other website, thenerdroom.net, which Mark does come over and frequent once in a while and throw down some pretty epic theories. So that's kind of where you can catch me.
I think there'll be more coming your way after the conversations we've had this evening. There'll be a couple more coming your way. Yeah, I need to just say both these gentlemen have podcasts that are appointment listening. If you drop into my feed, everything else drops to the bottom. Okay, you can find me on Twitter at Talk Star Wars, and everything else I do is at talkstarwars.co.uk, unless I'm writing on the nerdrum.net, of course. We will return next week when we intend to look at the next Darth Vader. Of course, it will be an 11 out of 10 book by next month, and whatever else we're up to in terms of comic books over the next month. Thank you for joining us, everybody, and we will see you next time. Talk Star Wars is a proud member of the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network. Find us at starwarscommonwealth.com alongside
The Tumbling Saber Podcast,
The Generation X-Wing Podcast,
The TSW Roundtable,
The Skyhoppers Podcast,
and The Nerd Room Podcast.
Head to StarWarsCommonwealth.com and take your first steps into a larger world.